We are very disappointed that the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Svakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. And also joining us today is our associate editor, Gia Manor. Hey, Gia.
Hey, what's up?
Welcome to AnCast, everybody. After a, I would say, deserved hiatus last week in the void between Comic-Con and Otakon.
Didn't feel like a hiatus.
The only one of us that actually had to go through the torturous going straight from San Diego to Baltimore was Gia. So thanks for that.
Sure, anytime. It's actually my third year handling all three of the cons. So,
man, July. July is such, I mean, it's fun, but it's just so fucking exhausting. And now that the summer preview takes place the day after AX, God, the whole month is just fucked.
Definitely. Well, and I think next week I'm going to actually find myself for a few hours at QuakeCon, because apparently I just can't get enough of large rooms with stinky people.
What the hell are you doing at QuakeCon?
Well, it's kind of one of those weird things where my flight out of Dallas is scheduled for like 5, and everybody's going to be at QuakeCon that day for the early part, so I'm kind of just stuck there for a few hours. I figure I'll see if there's any, you know, sort of anime case mods or something while I'm there. Yeah.
I didn't even know they still had QuakeCon.
I've never heard of QuakeCon.
It used to be a big LAN gathering. Basically, everybody puts their computers in a room and plays Quake all weekend.
I figured that much.
But Quake is so over. Like, no one plays it anymore, so I don't know what they...
Yeah, no one plays Quake anymore. They play pretty much anything else that's ever, actually. I was going to say that's recent, but then I thought, you know, not even so much that. Also, a lot of anime piracy going on. Everybody downloading stuff from each other, so.
God.
So basically, it's a bunch of gigabit connections.
Yeah.
Except they're all in the same room and not on the internet. You can connect in real life.
Well, at least I'm going the first day and not the last, when nobody has slept or showered or left the room.
Ew.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Just a primordial soup. Okay, well, before we get into all the convention stuff, we should talk about all the stuff we've seen. Been watching a lot of crap lately. I guess I'll start with, we'll just get this out of the way. I decided to check out the Hetalia dub, which was premiered at, I believe it was premiered at Otakon this past weekend. They had the voice cast out, and I was curious about it because the reports on it were basically, oh, it's super edgy, and they added in a bunch of jokes, like Holocaust jokes and shit, which to me was like, hey, that would ruin that show, you know, because I enjoyed the original. I thought the Japanese one version of it had its moments. It was kind of funny.
Whereas I came at it from the complete opposite perspective, where I was like, wow, that might save that show.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, though. Like, I was kind of torn. Like, I didn't know whether or not it was going to make it funnier or make it worse, and it made it way worse. Like, now the dub version of that show is what I thought it was before I saw it, which is to say, extremely obvious, you know, forced, edgy jokes that are really, really just, like, lame and obvious, and that's really what kills it, because... The Japanese version at least had some subtlety to it. It really was about these goofy characters, and there was sort of making fun of, you know, stereotypes and stuff like that. But it wasn't just so direct, obvious. Hey, you know, well, I guess the Italy character was, but like it's just, it ruins that show. Like, and the accents are terrible. Like, they're really bad.
The accents are really, really, really bad.
Well, and what pisses me off...
And
is
I know
like,
they're supposed to be, well, but that doesn't make it pleasant.
I don't think that they're supposed to be... I don't think that they're supposed to sound like amateurs are performing them, because that's what it sounds like. The Germany guy just puts a Z where the TH is supposed to be. It's the laziest, like, shittiest German... And I don't want to sit here and dump on it too much, because I don't want to do that, but... It ruins that show for me. Like, and people comparing it to South Park, stop. Because South Park has Emmy Award-winning satire. This is not Emmy Award-winning satire. This is really, really bad parody. I think it ruins that show. I'm still going to watch it when it comes out on DVD, but I will be watching the sub version. I don't know what they were thinking with the dub.
This basically just confirmed my suspicions. And, you know, before I did this, after my last giant rant about Hitalia, I got a lot of shit for obvious reasons. The show's really popular. So I'm like, well, you know, maybe I didn't give it enough of a chance. So I skipped to some of the middle episodes and, you know, it still wasn't doing a thing for me. It didn't quite incite the giant churning rage machine that, you know, it did earlier, but I was just like, this is not for me. I don't get it. It just doesn't work. And the dub really just did nothing to change that for me.
I think it completely changes the humor of the show. Like, it goes from being the Japanese sensibility, I think, is what makes the humor in that show work for me, which is really rare. That never happens, but I think that's what it is. Like, that Japanese sensibility is what makes it work for me. And the bludgeoning you over the head, quote-unquote comedy that they've added in the American
very kind of mean-spirited in a way.
And you know what? Actually, that is what it is. It's mean-spirited. The show originally, like, their tagline for it, which I really like, was Proud Nations hanging out, having fun. That's a great tagline for that show because that's what the show feels like in Japanese. The American version is fucking mean-spirited, nasty. It's making the jokes that somebody who thinks they're being funny is making. And it just makes everybody kind of like roll their eyes, and it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant. That's what I don't like about it. That's nail on head for me. So did you see it, Gia? What did you think? Did you see it?
I haven't watched the dub yet. I was occupied at other panels, I think. But I dug the first episode of the sub, and so I'm a little sad to hear that the dub, because I thought that was the kind of show where that was sort of just wacky and loose enough that a dub might really work for me, where I tend more towards subtitles. So I don't know. I'll still have to check it out myself, but I'm disappointed to hear that it's not awesome, I guess.
I mean, I generally don't like it when, and it's not a purity thing. It's not a purity thing at all. When they just like, let's make the dub really funny and totally different from the subs. I think the problem is that it's usually not funny. Like, these guys aren't.
Most of Funimation's punch-up dubs don't work for me at all.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they just need to take some comedy writing classes. I think maybe that would help. Because this stuff is sub sitcom level humor here, and I'm a comedy snob for sure, but it doesn't work for me. It's not funny. I don't know.
I'm very disappointed.
Can always blame Texas.
it's a Texas air, yeah. So I saw that, and then I think that's it for anime. Let's start with anime. Justin, did you see anything besides Hitalia?
Oh my! Well, no, not anime wise, but I had a lot of watching stuff this last couple weeks.
Okay. Well, we saw something really cool. We'll get to that in a minute. But what about you, Gia?
Well, my big thing at Otakon was Welcome to the Space Show, which the way I kept finding myself describing it was like the Chronicles, not even the Chronicles of Narnia, but the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe meets Galaxy Express 99, and then is like way longer than necessary. It's very pretty. There's nothing super, I don't know, like amazing about the story or the plot, but it all kind of works. It's just for some reason it goes on really, really, really long. It's a 2.5-hour movie, and you really feel that by the end of it. I really enjoyed a lot of the design and visuals. You know, obviously they put a lot of money and effort into that. You know, I interviewed the guys afterwards, and that should go up soon. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. But I definitely would have enjoyed it better in a comfier chair, or if it had been like, you know, a half an hour shorter.
Yeah, that's the generally the consensus opinion on that film is that it's way too long and the story falls apart apparently about an hour in. It starts losing its focus.
I don't know if I particularly felt that way about it. I felt like it was just sort of a many-tiered adventure, and that didn't particularly bother me. But I didn't notice that particularly, which doesn't necessarily mean it's not there. It might just mean I was too distracted by the shiny things pick up on that.
Well, I saw the trailer and then I saw the running time and I'm like, oh, it's one of those. And then I ran.
Yeah. Well, you know, Haruhi had the disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya had the same problem where it was 3 hours long. I mean, it was good, and I liked it, but it felt like just a lot of the moments were really drawn out. you know, and I appreciate that they were giving it a lot of sort of mood and atmosphere, but I was sitting on a cheap plastic fold-out chair for that 3-hour period, and I was so ready to get up. And I love Haruhi, and I love Yuki, the character who kind of is central in that particular movie, so.
Justin, you saw that, didn't you?
I did, and, boy, you know, I love Haruhi, and I will still buy it, but my God, that movie had problems.
It's incredibly self-indulgent, from what I understand.
It's really self-indulgent. It's really, towards the end, it's like, okay, shut up, I get it. You actually like this, you know, life that you had. And it's so bludgeons you over the top with it that it really, really, I've never seen a movie so desperately in need of someone in charge to just go, okay, lose 45 minutes.
Yeah. Although I will give it, one of the neat things about, in the books of Haruhi, you know, you hear the main character talk about Yuki Nagato and her very minute shifts in facial expression, and he just kind of tells them. And so it is nice to kind of get a chance to see that in some of the parts of the movie. I will definitely give it that.
But I love the pacing and how Haruhi in general is shot and the look of it. I would have a hard time going back to the novels now just because it would be hard to give that up.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that.
No, that was one of those ones where I had an invite to the same screening I think Justin was at. And I liked the show. I enjoyed the show. But I saw the runtime of the movie and said, no way in hell am I sitting through a 3-hour Haruhi movie. Like,
oh, towards the last act, it becomes a slog. Oh my God. It seems to never end, and it keeps just retreading the same things and bludgeoning you over the head with it. And you're like, no, stop. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, it was like, I think they just felt so like they wanted to include every freaking word of the book somehow in that film. And
it's like,
that,
no, it's a visual medium. You can show this shit.
Yeah. You know, picture worth 1,000 words. So that means you could have like cut that movie in half, right? I'm a sucker for Haruhi, and I'll keep spending money on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if you're a huge, huge, like really hardcore super fan of that show, 3 hours probably doesn't really quite feel like 3 hours. Like you're still getting what you want out of it.
Like, yeah, well, most people will be watching this on DVD at home, so they'll get to sit in like their cushy chairs. I go back to the fact that I was sitting in this really cheap, very uncomfortable chair, so that probably affected my opinion somewhat.
I was at the Lemley Sunset 5. Those chairs were awesome, and I was still, you know, kind of climbing the walls. But you know, the thing about the Japanese production system in general is that one of the big differences between how films are produced in America is that there the producer just kind of stays out of the editing room. They don't really take any they don't interact with the director at all and so what happens a lot of time is a director will kind of get lost in his own, you know, fantasy and, you know, fall in love with something that really doesn't work. And when that happens in Japan, the movie just suffers. Here, the producer can go and say, no, I don't care if I'm the bad guy, cut that the fuck out. And oftentimes, that needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't imagine they were focus testing the shit out of Haruhi Suzumiya. I would imagine the director probably had even more, like, look, just include every last single thing. Because if the fans aren't happy, there'll be blood riots on 2chan or whatever.
So, maybe, well, but that was a new director. Guys.
Well, that doesn't. Oh, yeah. I don't see why that matters or why that would change anything. You know, they're still going to say, like, because it sounds like the problem here is the ridiculous fidelity to the source material made the film way longer and more boring than it needed to be. And if they're just saying, look, just include every single last line of the book, because that's what the fans want. They want 100% fidelity. You know, the movie's going to suffer as a result.
Yeah, like, that's what the director's cut on the DVD version is for.
Yeah. So, speaking of good things, not shitty things, Justin and I got to see Scott Pilgrim vs. the World last week.
So jealous.
And you should be.
Fucking loved every single goddamn frame of that movie. I was giddy watching that. It was so good. Oh my God, it was so good.
This happens so rarely. You and I are in complete agreement.
Yeah, we totally agree.
This, you know, Zach and I came from came to this movie from very different perspectives. He was a huge fan of the manga. I hadn't read it. And was a little bit suspicious of anything that had been, you know, trumped up that much by that many nerds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. So, you know, I went in there and I was completely taken aback. It is completely about annoying hipsters. But that once you just kind of accept that, basically, it's kind of genius, because what it does is it takes the kind of graffiti, chaotic nature of the cartoon and 8-bit and anime world that, you know, we grew up with, and turns it into pretty much outright subjective surrealism in a way that I haven't seen in a broad-playing, entertaining, relatable film since Run Lola Run. I just haven't seen that.
Yeah, actually, that was a really good comparison. It did feel like the first time I saw Run, Lola, Run, in terms of like, wow, this is pop art, and I haven't seen anything like it in a really long time, or perhaps ever. You know, it's the film works completely on its own. I know people are sort of asking about, like, how does it compare to the comics? It works completely on its own. It's sort of the first three volumes of the comics, and then it has its own ending. Which is similar to the books, but not. It's much more truncated, and it actually works for a film. Like, the differences between the two are necessary for their mediums. There's no one's not lacking, the other's not lacking. It's, you know, I actually kind of liked the movie ending a little bit more, just because the book ending gets a little too mishmashy, gets a little too confused. But God, I love that. I loved it, and the pisser was I walked out and I'm like, well, I don't get to see this again for another 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I had the same reaction, because I'm going to have to see it again just to try to figure out what they did, because it is so fast and so layered, both visually and audio-wise. The production on this thing is just top-notch.
Yeah. The only thing that I think is missing from the film version is Ramona Flowers' character is not – doesn't have as much backstory. She's not as fleshed out, and so it's a little bit more difficult to figure out why Scott is so in love with her. In the books, it's very clear why they get along and why they're in love. But in the movie, I think it's he thinks she's really cute, and you know that's kind of and mysterious and hard to get, and that's why he's sort of after her.
I didn't need that. I got that.
Well, right. But I'm coming from a perspective of someone who knows more about that character, so right, I was expecting a little bit more. The other thing I sort of noticed is that they downplayed Scott's douchiness about Knives. He's not as much of a dick in the movie to Knives as he is in the books. Like, he becomes unsympathetic for a period of time in the books because he's treating her so poorly. And it's not, like, abusive or anything, but that period, Justin, if you remember in the film, when he suddenly becomes disinterested in her.
Right.
In the books, that's much more sort of brutal. Like, it's much like, God, you're a dick, dude. Like... And in the film, the characters are all telling him stop being a dick. But and they do that in the books too. But it's just it's not quite as much. And I think it works. It was a little bit more subtle. But anyway, yeah, fucking fantastic. It doesn't come out for another week and a half, so that sucks. But goddamn, go see it. I really hope it opens. I really hope it does well. I think they might be pre-screening it a little too much. I think everybody who's really excited about this movie will have has an opportunity to see it before it comes out for free. So I'm a little concerned about that, but I don't know.
But it sounds like a lot of people are going to want to go see it a second time. Who are those people?
Yeah.
So
I think so, yeah. I mean, what they're doing is the old strategy that didn't work for, let's say, Serenity, where Universal pre-screened the fuck out of Serenity, thinking, well, we'll let the fans see it ahead of time, and the fans will spread good word of mouth. And then Serenity fucking face-planted when it came out, because the only audience for it saw it, you know, 2 weeks beforehand or at Comic-Con or whatever.
Well, the other thing about this film in particular is that its audience, even if, you know, you're coming at it fresh, it pretty much cuts off abruptly at age 45.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. I would say even earlier than that. Like, 40. I wouldn't tell my parents to see it. I would barely tell. My sister's only a few years older than me. I'm not sure I would recommend it to her. I think you kind of have to be in tune with nerddom, I think, to really get it. Because, at one point, Ramona pulls out a giant 8-bit hammer to fight off her lesbian former lover. My sister doesn't know what hammer space is. just going to wonder what the fuck is going on. But at the same time, like, I don't know, maybe it's so unique that, like, you should just expose everybody to it and say...
Who doesn't know what Hammer Space is? Everyone grew up with Bugs Bunny. That's still alive.
Give me a break, Justin. It's not a, it's not a common phrase. You wouldn't go up to someone on the street and ask them if they know what that is.
Well, maybe they don't have a word for it.
But... Yeah, well, anyway. I do think it's for geeks of all ages and types and sizes and hipsters and all that, and I don't know.
Anyone who listens to this show will probably like it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would. Anybody who's even knows what anime is, I think, would really get something out of it.
Oh, yeah, this is fun. Count how many anime references you can find in it.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot, but that's...
I will do that. I will write a post on that. I'll go see the movie, like, 5 times just to write that post.
You know, it's straight. It's all straight from the comics.
Don't you dare try to expense that, Gia.
I wouldn't dream of it. I haven't expensed anything.
But yeah, so that, and I mean, I kind of wish it wasn't opening on the world's most crowded weekend. It's opening opposite fucking Expendables and Eat, Pray, Love. So the audience is super split. But I don't
know.
Eat,
Pray, Love, there's a big crossover right
there.
Well,
no, but Expendables is a huge crossover. Like,
that's true.
I would say that the audience is really going to split. But I hope it finds a massive audience. I hope it does really well. And that people are, you know, it makes Universal even more willing to take chances on something like this, because it's a big chance, I think.
Yeah.
It's fairly risky. I don't know how much they spent on it, but yeah. I don't know. So that was great, especially after this summer, which has been...
Shit. Although I did see Inception, which... I was the last person on the planet to see Inception.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. It wasn't quite what it was puffed up to be, but it was good.
Yeah. That's a good description.
I felt the same way as you. I felt like it was talked up a lot more than I kind of watched it. I was like, oh, okay, that was cool. That was not life changing, but
it lost me more than once.
Yeah,
it sags in the middle pretty hardcore. And the 80th time you're watching the slow motion shot of dudes in a truck or Joseph Gordon-Levitt floating around, it's like, fucking get on with it, please. I was waiting for that van to hit the water. Like, hit the fucking water.
Well, and there was some weird stuff where, like, they talked about how they were going to go through, I forget, 10 years in one of the dreams. You know, it would be a lot faster in one of the whatever level dreams. And then that 10-year thing never happened? Am I spoiling it? I don't know.
No.
I don't know if that's big enough to be a spoiler, but... it definitely felt like there were things talked about that did not happen, which is probably why it felt overexplained to so many people, because they did overexplain.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was missing any pieces. In fact, the film was incredibly straightforward for something that people are describing as confusing. I didn't think it was confusing at all. Like, at no point was I confused about what was happening, because it's all so explained over and over and over again. Yeah, I don't know. Some people are like, oh, you know, oh, was it all a dream or whatever? It's like, it's so straightforward. There's one little question mark at the end, but that's it. You know, like, it's an incredibly straightforward film. Like, it's not.
There were times where I'm like, okay, wait, what's happening when? Why are they doing this? But I didn't really. It all didn't matter by the end.
Yeah, totally.
But then also went and saw The Kids Are All Right, which I really recommend.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was great. That was a lot of fun. All the good movies are coming out at the end of the summer this year, I guess. But
it's just like the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Kids Are All Right was really, I recommend it to people over the age of 18. It was very good definitely, and a movie for adults about adults. It was good times.
Yes.
So we should move on to Otakon. Now neither Justin nor I had to go to that. I use the word had to go.
I really wanted to go, but it wasn't happening this year.
Yeah, it's just too close to San Diego. But Gia, you went, so let's hear about it. How was it?
It was insane. I had an unusual experience. I usually, when I have a 3-day convention, I'll fly out on Thursday and leave on Monday, so I have a bit more of a loose schedule. But this time, I didn't book my stuff, and I flew in Friday and literally went straight from the airport to the convention center with my bag still on me and went to 3 panels or something like that. And that's when I finally managed to get some dinner before I did another 2 panels, and then I got to drop my bags off at the hotel. Very exciting. So it was really a crazy weekend, because then on Saturday you had, of course, the giant evacuation of 29,000 people.
So what was that like? What happened there?
Well, I was actually walking out of Welcome to the Space Show. Like, literally the credits were rolling, and we were walking out, and we saw the lights going off, and we were like, oh, how long has that been going on? I guess we better leave. So we kind of walked out, of the exhibit hall, I walked into the Skywalk over towards the Hilton, which was a much, much calmer place to be. And I was going to sit down and like get ready for my next thing because I had no idea how long this all would take or, you know, whether it would push my schedule back or not. And then I got a call from Egan who wanted me to go out and take photos. So I packed all my stuff back up and went outside into the heat, into the crowd of 29,000 people. They were trying to get out of the street and, you know, they all had to be across the street from the convention center before they could have the marshals clear the building. And, you know, I mean, the fans were having a good time. I saw something like a Carmel Dancin' Samba line running up and down the street. There was a lot of Marco Polo. I don't think people get how to play that game. I'm pretty sure it involved a pool.
At one point, it did. I don't know. Now it's just people shouting.
That never happens at conventions, so, you know.
Yeah, right. You know, a lot of the sort of memes and photo taking and just a giant, whatever happens when you have a giant crowd of 29,000 people all trying to be in a very small space and all trying to be ready to storm the building as soon as it's opened back up. That was a little scary. I was hanging out the Skywalk. I decided it would make a lot more sense to wait because that opened up later. The Skywalks reopened later than the front doors did. I think because they were trying to use them exclusively to bring back the dealers and the guests and, you know, the important people. Which I was not one of, apparently.
Well, so, yeah. So let me ask this, because Otakon has very sort of public behavior rules, like sort of to prevent an Anime Boston type situation where it's just anarchy. And according to some friends of mine that were there, both Mike Tool and Daryl Surratt told me that this is basically what happened, that it was okay until the fire alarm got pulled, and then the staff had to put their attentions towards evacuating the building and not stop people from being obnoxious douchebags. And that's when, like, hell kind of broke loose and people just kind of started, oh, now I'm going to act like a fucking madman in public and start screaming at the top of my lungs and, you know, shouting internet memes. Like, that's, according to them, that's when things started getting pretty bad with, in terms of, like, attendee behavior. Did you notice that at all or experience that?
I definitely noticed some of that when I was outside of the convention center. But once you're outside and across the street, I don't know how much the convention can take responsibility for your activities.
Well, I'm not saying they should take responsibility for it. I'm just saying, like, that's what happened. It's like a flip.
Yeah,
it's like a switch.
Yeah, no, there was definitely a lot of stupidity going down in that crowd. And, you know, a lot of people would just kind of, like, hang out in the middle of the street until somebody yelled at them and they were forced kind of back onto the, you know, they actually were keeping people off of the sidewalk, too. Unless they were actively walking, I guess. So there were a lot of fans just kind of trying to push the boundaries or walking, you know, in the middle of the street when a train was on its way or whatever stupid things they were coming up with. I didn't see a ton because I was only outside for as brief a period as I possibly could get away with before running back into the cool, safe place that is the Hilton, which is actually where all the panels were. So, like, my stuff didn't get delayed at all, oddly enough. But I understand it took a while to get that. I actually heard the exhibit hall took a big hit, that it things had really been going, but then they never managed to quite pick back up full steam after everybody came back in, which is a little disappointing.
It's a little weird,
I suppose.
Huh. So it sounds like maybe you were too busy to get a full picture of, you know, how the convention went. But, I mean, normal for Otakon, just a normal Otakon aside from the fire alarm thing, or how was it overall?
It felt more crowded to me, and I heard a lot of other people comparing it, actually a lot of people saying how it seemed so much more crowded than Expo, and I don't know how much of that was Expo's slight drop in attendance and how much of that was that Expo has sort of a larger space. I don't actually know the square footage. I don't know which one is technically larger.
LA Convention Center is much bigger than the Baltimore Convention Center. There's a lot more space. And I think that might be why AX also doesn't feel quite as obnoxiously chaotic and teenager screaming con.
They added the Hilton. That's new.
Yeah,
because they've got the Hilton and they've got the big sky. A lot of people just hanging out on the Skywalk towards the Hyatt and stuff. A lot of people hanging out. There's kind of like a square out there. I also saw pictures of, there was a Hetalia cosplay gathering. And, you know, if you've been to Otakon, you probably know the place that's sort of where one of the big lobbies is that's down, down towards the Skywalk to the Hilton. And then there's an escalator down. There's usually just masses of cosplayers trying to get their photos taken. Mm-hmm. And they basically, I think, filled up that entire space with Hetalia cosplayers or something.
Holy shit.
Insane. There were a lot of Italia cosplayers there.
Wow. Well, it's nice that something's popular.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it definitely felt pretty crowded. The areas that I went into, although, you know, some of the panels, obviously not so much. The producers and directors panel had one of the larger panel rooms, and there were like 12 people there, so we all just sat in a circle instead, which was kind of cool for us, but you sort of feel bad for the panelists because they come into this giant room and it's empty. So I thought that was kind of a weird choice.
Well, that's, you know. I mean, that's what people talk about. That's what people were saying on Twitter. It's sort of a common complaint that there's a huge line for the surviving the zombie apocalypse panel, and then no one shows up for the Japanese director panels.
Yeah, well, it's like, if you know that that's the trend, then shouldn't you be swapping the rooms?
Because then the panelists
don't feel like they're leaving as much of the room empty, and you can get more people into the whatever the other panel is.
I think the thinking is probably you run the risk of insulting the guest by putting them in a closet.
You know, all the rooms are decent size.
So I wanted to ask this. Your experience this year was even more truncated than usual. But I've noticed, and maybe it's because pretty much all the conventions I go to are four-day cons. The three-day conventions, especially Otakon, which I think seems like it needs another day, it feels like it's over before it starts. Like, I wake up Friday morning, and people are tweeting about Otakon, and some people are just arriving, like you were, on Friday. And then by Saturday night, that's it. Like, it's done. It's like 24 hours, and then it's over, because nothing happens on Sunday.
There's a definite truth to that. I mean, there were a lot of people hanging around on Sunday, definitely. Michael Toole's panel on the Dubs at Time Forgot was packed.
Yeah, I'm sure. But what I'm saying is it feels like it's over. Like, Sunday always feels like it's over. Half of everyone goes home. I don't know. Like, it just feels like it's over before it even starts. Like, it's such a quick event. And the four-day cons feel like they have more room to breathe. There's more stuff to do. It feels like a real event. I don't know. What's
the
feeling on that?
I'm coming at this from the opposite perspective. I'm used to the three-day cons, and AX for years was the only four-day con that I went to. And now with San Diego, I didn't even stay for all of that. The four-day con, by day four of AX, I'm always just like, okay, and already I'm done with this. This was fun. I get it, but stop.
Well, I mean, I usually go home on Sundays, like in the middle of the day. Like, San Diego's technically a 5-day convention. I get there Wednesday morning and I'm there until Sunday morning, generally. And that feels like a real experience. It feels like I've gotten a lot out of it, you know? And AX sort of feels the same way. Like, I feel like I'm getting a full experience. It's not just Friday, Saturday, done. I don't know. I mean, and plus Otakon has at least at this point as many attendees as AX. I don't know. I feel like it needs a Thursday. I feel like it needs a Thursday, but I don't know how many people would necessarily.
Well, what if they pushed to like to Labor Day weekend and had the Monday?
Well, I would love that because then I could.
Then
go.
It would also not be right on the heels of Comic Con.
Yeah, because then I could go to Otakon. That would be great if they had it on Labor Day weekend. But I don't think they can get the convention space for that. I mean, they already announced it next year. It's the same thing. Next year, San Diego ends on the 24th. Otakon starts on like the 27th.
Yeah, like I saw that.
Hooray!
Believe me, if I can go to Otakon instead of San Diego, I am all about that.
Yeah, you had an awful time at San Diego.
Oh my god, I didn't realize that West Hollywood had taken over San Diego for that show. That is, the nightlife there is pretty much the entire part of Hollywood I spend my life avoiding.
Well, that's actually natives. It's not necessarily Hollywood people taking over. That's the San Diego, that's the Gaslamp District club scene. It's always like that. It's douchebag central. Like, it is club kids wall to wall. It's terrible. Like that, and there's always stories of like nerds from Comic-Con having run-ins with the you know, fist-pumping fist-pumping douchebags from the Gaslamp District. Yeah, it's always like that. So that's not necessarily Comic-Con, that's just San Diego. But, yeah, I don't know. I had a great time at Comic-Con. I actually probably had the best Comic-Con I've ever had. I got to see everything I wanted to see. It was awesome.
Had I been into Scott Pilgrim yet, maybe I'd feel differently.
Maybe. I don't know. okay, well, we've got a call-out show today, so we should probably go ahead and get to that. All right, our next call is with Aaron from... Where are you from, Aaron?
Mount Crawford, Virginia.
Oh, okay, Virginia, awesome.
Virginia.
Right, yeah. So what's on your mind, dude? What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about why new fans aren't collectors like older fans were back when the bubble hit, when there was a boom. And I'm a new fan myself. I've only been an anime fan for about 2 years, but I have a very respectable collection. And yet, all we get nowadays are keep cases. And it's kind of depressing.
You mean like the really tiny, cheap box sets?
Yeah.
There's definitely been a huge shift in how video has been consumed. I mean, the really, really early days, we bought everything just because, you know, it was seen as rare, and who knows if we're going to get another chance. But, the last few years, as anime has gotten easier and easier to get, there's no real good reason to keep it around a lot of times. I mean, it's streaming for free. 90% of the time, you're never going to watch it again. So, you know.
Well, there's a question. So you said you had a pretty decent size collection. How often do you find yourself rewatching parts of your collection?
I've actually started a routine where I'll watch something new and then I'll rewatch something old. And I've been doing that for a little bit. Right. So I never get burned out anymore. And so I always have something new in the backlog. And I always get through rewatches. It's worked out fine.
I mean,
Do you have a lot of time on your hands?
Yeah, I only work about 4 or 5 hours a day, and then I have nothing else to do, really.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah, I wish I had that much time to watch anime, but I don't, and I have a feeling that a lot of people don't.
Well, I don't know about that. It's people don't have time. It's, I mean, people exaggerate how busy they are. I mean, your average 8-hour workday in a cubicle environment, that person's putting in maybe 4 hours. Like, the rest of the time is dicking around on the internet. I think a lot of it has to do with people just, they don't want to spend that much time watching anime. Like, you know, there's so many other distractions. It's competing for your attention with everything else in your media library. So, you know, TV, video games, the internet, along, you know, digging around on Facebook is a competition for people's time. So, you know, that's part of it. And I think that, you know, Justin was correct in saying, like, there's been a big shift away from the collecting mentality. Like, I think now it's rare if you find someone who has a really big media library and consistently buys, you know, every movie that they kind of liked or every anime that they're kind of interested in. I'm curious about your consumption habits. Do you watch fan subs and then buy? Do you watch streaming and then buy? Do you just blind buy?
I used to watch fan subs, but I stopped watching those about a year and a half ago. So now everything I do is a blind buy. And I used to stream too, but I have a crappy internet service provider, and so I can't stream without fucking up my computer.
Okay.
And so I just read reviews, read synopsis, and then I just buy based on hoping I like it.
Now, if you had a faster internet connection, do you think that would change for you? You wouldn't buy so much, or is it a point of pride for you to collect?
It's a pride thing to collect, but I don't know if I would stream more often. Honestly, I don't know if I would actually. I remember when I was in a burnout, it was because I couldn't buy anime at the time because I was having money problems. Even though I could stream stuff, I just didn't want to because I didn't feel like it because I couldn't buy anything.
Right. So it really is a collector mentality. It really is a desire to purchase and own things.
Yes.
Now, I wonder how much a lot of this is socioeconomic. I mean, you have a job, Aaron, but a lot of teenagers are having a really hard time finding work these days. I wonder if people are just more broke than they used to be.
Well, that's certainly...
I should point out I'm 19.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But you have a job. And you don't have to pay your own rent, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I co-own our family business, so...
Right. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, no, I mean,
know that's rare.
Every media collector I know generally has been doing it for a really long time. I don't think our current generation really promotes media collecting, especially just the way people consume things now. Like, I don't imagine there's a lot of teenagers with the strong desire to have a giant DVD library. Like, the stuff has become disposable to them. It's not a permanent thing. It's watch it, move on to the next thing. But having grown up in a culture where, you know, we had a big VHS movie library, and then I got into collecting DVDs, and now I'm into collecting Blu-rays. Like, that's just how I grew up. The stuff wasn't quite as impermanent as it is now.
I was always a media pack rat. You know, my parents were not this way. That I file and, you know, and put in a box every single Nintendo game we got when I was a kid. So right. It's just, I think it might be genetic.
Well, my parents aren't pack rats. I think my collecting came from when I was younger. I always collected Pokemon cards and Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and it was just a big thing for me to have this giant binder full of stuff that I own. And it also made me feel good knowing a lot of it was rare and valuable. You know.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if a lot of it, what happened to the anime in terms of the bubble was kind of just getting caught up in a bigger bubble of media ownership being attainable for the first time. I mean, suddenly, you know, VHS was, people forget, VHS was kind of expensive and you couldn't get a lot of stuff. It was basically whatever was hot at the time was, you know, on sale. And then there was a bunch of absolute garbage at the supermarket checkout aisle. And that was more or less it. Everything else that you could get for rent was, you know, $90 or so.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of movies, you couldn't buy them when they came out. There was a rental window because at Blockbuster or whatever, they had that. They had all these kinds of shitty deals that like, you know, a movie comes out, you really want to own it on VHS, it's $100 to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that would really immediately be available for sale were, like, Disney movies that were, like, $24.99 when they came out, or $29.99. That was kind of it. Like, only a small selection of films were immediately available to purchase. And so when DVD came out, that went away completely.
Right. And so, you know, people kind of went crazy because for the first time you could watch, you could have a big library of movies that you could watch anytime. And I think people just got a little too excited about that. And then, you know, after they looked at the giant wall of DVDs they never bought, they're like, really? I bought this? And so that kind of cooled things off. And now things are moving in the streaming and video on demand on cable direction.
Well, I was just going to say that one of the other things that has kind of happened is your giant media collection is absolutely worthless. DVDs are worth nothing. They're worth less. They're worth almost less than nothing. Whenever I replace something with a Blu-ray, replace a movie I already have on DVD with a Blu-ray, which I'm slowly going through the process of doing that with almost everything I have. The DVD is frequently I can't get 50 cents for it. So I just ship them off to friends and family who, you know, maybe they want a copy of that movie. But it does kind of kill your enthusiasm for it a little bit, just because it is so immediately worthless. It's like buying a comic book,
you know? Or a car.
Or a car. Right. Yeah. It depreciates by like 50% when you drive it off the lot, you know?
Yep. On the plus side, as a collector, as someone on the other end of that, it's really nice to be able to buy like DVDs of really great movies like Broken Flowers or About Schmidt for 75 cents on the Amazon used market.
Yeah. Aaron, where do your tastes lie? What do you find yourself purchasing more of?
I watch everything. Really, I don't have a specific taste. If it sounds good, I'll look into it and add it to my list and see if I ever get in the mood to buy it.
So you don't really have a favorite genre or a favorite kind of show? It's just anything and everything?
Yeah.
So who's getting your money, Murray?
Aaron? Funimation right now, because most of my money is going to Funimation because they're still dubbing stuff and everyone else is releasing a lot of sub only. But with Funimation re-releasing their stuff a lot, I just wait for cheap sets and then I'll go buy ADV's old backlog or Right Stuff's old backlog. I actually recently just got the Captain Tyler remastered in OVAs the other day. So while I'm waiting for Funimation stuff to drop down, I've heard. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's I wasn't so enamored with the OVAs, but the movie the TV show is one of the great classics, I think. So right. where are you buying your stuff from? Do you buy it brick and mortar or?
I buy online. The Right Stuff, DVD. Planet, Deep Discount,
so eBay, wherever it's cheapest.
Amazon, wherever I can find. Yeah, wherever it's cheapest, basically.
Now, you mentioned you don't buy sub only. You only buy dub stuff.
I've bought a couple of sub only stuff, and I used to watch fan subs. I didn't mind watching sub, but as I started buying more DVDs and watching more dubs, it was harder to go back and watch sub stuff, and so I've just stopped. And the sub only stuff I do have is short. It's a Futari H that Media Blast has released, and Magical Witch Punie-chan. And I have Aria, but I haven't watched that at all.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go to. Once you get used to being lazy, it's kind of hard to go back and you know, do the work to read stuff.
Well, I wouldn't say that dub fans are lazy.
Well, no. I get lazy when I watch dubs. Because that means I can usually do something else at the same time. You know, subtitles, you have to sit there and watch.
Well, I can't even watch dubs and do other stuff. When I watch anime, I have to watch anime. I can't do anything. I cut off my computer. And I just watch the show, and when I'm done, then I can do other stuff.
See, I'm finding that even that's pretty rare these days. I'm seeing lots and lots of people that are like having full long IM conversations while watching something subtitled. I'm like, how are you even doing that? My brain doesn't work like that.
You know what? Here's the thing: it's bullshit. They're not paying any. They're not paying any attention. Like, I refuse to believe. Like, I have friends who are like that. Who like, I'll recommend a movie to them. And they'll be like, oh, hey, I'm watching this movie. And they'll be talking to me. And I'm like, why don't you watch this movie that I recommended to you instead of sitting here talking to me? Because I know you're not paying any attention to it. I consider myself to be a pretty, you know, of relative intelligence. And if I have something on in the background, like a show, if I have a show that I really like and I just turn it on and then I start messing around on the internet, I'm not paying much attention to it. I might get the gist of it, but I'm certainly not going to appreciate it. Like the way that you just described watching anime, that's how I watch like Mad Men. Because I don't want to miss anything, and I wanted to give it my full attention. And so I think people sort of overplay just how much they can multitask. You know, I really think people overplay it. That's why, like, you see people in movie theaters, like, texting and stuff. Why don't you just not go to the movies if that's what you're going to do during the film? You paid for this. You know, it's stupid to me.
Those people are just dickbags because that giant bright screen is just shining right in everyone's eye.
Yeah, that's terrible on many levels. But if you're that invested in something, if you claim to be like, oh, I'm a big fan of this, and like you're barely paying attention to it, it's like just shut the distractions off and enjoy the film or the show or whatever, you know. But
it's not really an appreciation thing for me. It's so hard to explain. I don't treat. Or think of anime as some kind of high art form. I think it's just pure entertainment with art in the background. So when I want to watch entertainment, I have to zoom in on it or else I'm just going to blank, forget what I watched, and then feel bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I think you're one of the last of a breed of fan that still really wants to collect DVDs and still really sort of invested in it. I mean, there will always be the oddball that comes out of this new generation of fans, but I do think the collector is sort of a dying breed, I would say. And I think that's just a result of our culture.
Actually, Funimation actually did a survey recently where they asked if they're gauging the interest of people who'd want chipboard sleeves with the half sets that they're releasing, which would cost about $5-6 more. But they've showed interest in see who would want chipboard or paper sleeves, which would cost about $10 less than the chipboard ones. And they're thinking about putting in items like Genion used to do, like figures, plushies and stuff. So that kind of spurred the question, you know, are collectors coming back? Which makes it sound like it's not from you two.
No, I don't think so. Those comment cards that they get are people who buy Funimation products. That's their sampling.
It was a survey they put up on the site. It wasn't one of the cards. It was a survey they put up on their site.
Okay, well, that's still people interested in Funimation products. It's not like a wide swath of fans. You know, if they go back to that, I think it'd be kind of foolish just because that didn't work. they cost a lot of money, and you know, Genion spent a lot of money on those releases.
Sit there in the warehouse.
Yeah, and you can I can go to my local Fry's and still buy a lot of that Genion stuff that came out in the mid-2000s. And it just, you know, I don't know. I think the cheap releases are the way to go on that. I don't think collecting is coming back in any appreciable way. I really don't.
Well, a lot of people think it's because people aren't buying the half set. People aren't buying the half sets, and they're trying to encourage people to buy the half sets instead of waiting for the box sets or the SA save editions like I'm doing. Like people like me who pass up the half sets, wait for the box sets, and then they'll wait for the save editions. They don't feel like buying the box set.
Well, I know it's easy money, and I know they keep you know, pushing that out because, you know, people do buy them. But at the same time, you know, those reprices and repackagings are depreciating their own product. And if people are expecting that, you know, yeah. you can't have both.
Yeah, you know, the same thing actually is that exact same thing is happening with a lot of comic books now. People don't buy singles, they wait for the graphic novels. Now they don't wait for the graphic novels, they wait for the complete edition that'll come out 6 months to a year after the individual graphic novels. You know, same thing happens. You depreciate your product when, you know, 6 months later you can just buy the complete set for $15 less than buying the individual box sets, or sometimes $40 less than buying the part one and part two or whatever.
Yeah.
So that depreciates the value, but they have to make money. I mean, this is about revenue. So, you know, I don't know, that stuff's got to happen. So we need to move on to our next caller, but thanks for joining us today, Aaron. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we're talking to Tom. Where are you from, Tom?
Right now, Vancouver.
Vancouver. Okay. Are you Canadian, or are you just there for the time being?
English American from Pittsburgh, who's currently in Vancouver.
Oh, what's in Vancouver?
Grad school right now.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's cool. So what's on your mind, dude? What do you want to talk about today?
Fan service and how I just... I keep seeing every season so many titles that their sole objective appears to be getting fan service out there. And I just see it strangling decent story concepts. I think last season in particular, we saw a really promising show about some guy who was trying to be like head priest or something. And then, you know, some very controlling, restrictive society brands him as, oh no, you have to be this evil demon thing, right?
Oh, you're talking about Demon King Daimao or whatever.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is a concept that could fly. And then 10 seconds in, I'm like, oh, braided panties. Great. Okay. Where is this taking me?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a variety of reasons for that, but I largely agree with you. And there's a faction of people out there that just love fan service and don't find it distracting. And that's my problem with it. I find it really distracting. It would be akin to like you're watching, oh, I don't know, Inception. And every third shot is of Ellen Page's crotch. It's really distracting. Yeah. Like, it's hard to focus on a story like that. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Justin?
I'm pretty much on the same page. The problem I have with fan service is a lot of times the creators don't seem to have any conception of when it's completely out of place and inappropriate and bordering on offensive.
Yeah.
Like they will I've seen lots of really cheesecakey shots, like right in the middle of a really dramatic scene when a character is like genuinely in trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, that's not the time when I want to start whipping it out and start whacking it.
Yeah.
That does seem to be the sole purpose for a lot of that material, is just, hey, come watch our show, kind of.
Well, yeah, I mean, it obviously sells. I think you can kind of point to otaku culture in general in Japan. Now, these are people who generally, I don't think it's unfair to say they have not a lot of contact with the opposite sex, and so they get it all. Their relationship with the opposite sex is through anime and manga and their figures and stuff.
I totally agree.
I don't think this is an unfair thing to say.
Yeah.
And so that's why there's so much of it in everything, because they want it. That's how they get it. That's how they interact with the opposite sex, is through these fantasy characters and two dimensional
girls. It seems to carry the core fandom.
Yeah.
But I get the impression that it's less of a crutch and more of a disease at this point, because a lot of the moderate fan base just gets completely turned off by something like that Demon King Mao show, where it's like, oh, this could be fun. And then, bah, slow choking noises like Darth Vader's in the room.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely does nothing to sate the opinion that anime is for perverts. And that's something that is actually quite an issue in Japan, because, you know, people look at Akihabara culture and they see a bunch of, you know, guys clutching their scantily clad grind pillows. And there's pretty much, you know, like most normal people, they would go, you know, kind of not interested in that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is another side of that, is that all of us right now, that there are people listening to this who are going, man, what a bunch of prudes. And we actually have some people in the forums where every time someone complains about the amount of fan service in something, they assume it's because, I don't know, where that person is too Christian or too,
well,
you know, turned
no,
off
there's a,
by
there's
sex.
A time and a place for fan right. service. And when it's yeah. crowding out legitimate setting detail, legitimate character development,
story. Yeah.
Story, everything that makes a good title, a good title. And then at the end of the day, a good title comes down to, was the animation good? Well, being an animated title, I would hope so. Can we move on to something that isn't obvious? Yeah.
I can't speak for either of you, but I don't think anyone that knows me would consider me a prude.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's nobody that knows me. I mean, I'm just it's not something that I talk about a lot, but nobody I know considers me to be a prude. I certainly don't shy away from joking about it, but it's a defensive thing to say to criticize something for being having distracting fan service in it. They don't find it distracting, so they assume it's an issue with you. But it's not like the most recent example I can think of is High School of the Dead, which has has incredibly creepy fan service in it, where
everything bounces like one of those volleyball games for the Xbox.
Yeah, well, that's not that's fine. The problem that I have is when the zombies are ripping a girl apart, and there's a crotch shot, or you know, it's. Fan service while the girl's being eaten alive, which is fucking gross. Like, that's just unsettling.
I don't think I got that far in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's actually something that happens in a lot of American slasher movies, too, and I find it just as unsettling there.
It's not quite as direct. Now, I watch a lot of horror movies, and while the girls are sexualized, it's a sex scene, and then they get ripped apart. It's not...
Well, there is snakes on a plane. I mean, that was just... That one scene in the bathroom.
Right. Well, who remembers snakes on a plane? But
yeah, I don't see that. Most of the world, I did not see snakes on a plane.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, I mean...
I was in college at the time, so that was, yeah.
Yeah, no, I saw it opening night like everybody... like the only crowds that did. But it's the combo sex and violence. That's nothing new, but the... Literally, like, this girl is being fetishized as she's being killed. That's... different. That's not quite the same. It's not like a close-up shot of a girl's breasts while Jason is cutting her throat. That's not the way horror movies work. That's just a little too much for normal audiences. And you know, I pointed that out in my review of the show, like, well, this is creepy. I don't know.
It's discouraging when each season it seems like there are more and more titles that sell purely based on some kind of raw panty shot per minute count.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they must, you know, they wouldn't keep making them if they weren't successful on some levels. So at some point, it just feels like I'm shouting into the wind here. Hey, Japan, stop being sexually deviant.
Yeah. Well, it's not even that. I mean, if they carry their core fan base, but you have to imagine who else could they get if they tried to not be quite as pandering. Yeah. I mean, would their core fan base really abandon them if they weren't as pandering?
Right. Yeah, it's not like the fan base won't rush to fill that void on their own. Kamika.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like shows that have absolutely no even hints at sexualization of the characters. There's mountains and mountains of porn for them.
I'll bet I could find porn for like Beast Player Aaron if I wanted to.
I'm sure you could. Like that.
I haven't even heard of that.
An NHK show about a little girl who befriends animals. But yeah, yeah.
Oh god.
I didn't even think to go there. See, we're not prudes.
Oh god.
Yeah, it's a bit much. So I think it's otaku culture, and I mean, it bothers me too, but there's literally nothing anyone can do about it. This stuff is primarily the haven for nerds in Japan, and nerds in Japan are sort of, I guess, infamously sexless. And this is how they, you know, this is how they express themselves. That's where they get that. So I don't know. I personally wish it would tone it down a little bit. I get creeped out or just distracted by things. And every new season, it's like, okay, well, which show is going to be primarily you know, jiggle shots. Like, there's at least 15.
And which one is the stealth jiggle shot hit? It takes like 2 episodes to get there.
Yeah.
I have to admit, there are a select few fan service shows that I find funny, not necessarily because of the fan service, but because of how awkwardly it's handled. Like, for example, by the time viewers hear this, I'm in the process right now of putting up, what's it called? Project Blue Earth SOS.
Mm-hmm.
There is a busty blonde chick in that whose sole purpose in that show is to jiggle, and her character name is Lotta Braced.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
It's like, I know you were going for the Austin Powers James Bond name thing, but learn English.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, it's a show that immediately springs to mind that has fan service, but does it in a way that's sort of appropriately adding sex appeal to the show without it being creepy or weird would be Cowboy Bebop. That's like the closest I can think of to a show that has blatant fan service in it, but it's not, you know,
episode one.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that show has sex appeal, but it's not this over the top, like you're watching this to jerk it to the girls sort of thing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, it's like the fan service in that isn't there to take away, like it isn't taking up space for character development or setting development or just the general plot. I mean, with a lot of these shows, they take a good 5-10 seconds to set up a jiggle shot or a panty shot when you could be using that 5 or 10 seconds of really expensive animation time to, you know, hurry the story along.
I have to wonder how much of this to blame on the animators themselves being nerds and kind of maybe overcompensating.
Oh yeah, well, there's countless countless interviews with Japanese animators who are like, "Well, I like to draw sexy girls, so that's why this show has so much of this in it." So it's probably a combination of a number of cultural factors in Japan all colluding at the same time to make sure that we get half a dozen shows every year, a dozen shows every year, that our sole intention is to fuel Arrow figure sales and shit like that. I wish they would tone it down. Now, there's the other crowd. There's a crowd of people out there that treat it as though it's edgy comedy. So they treat the fan service like, oh, I can't believe they went there, specifically with a lot of the Lolicon titles. Like, there is an audience out there that's like, oh, it's supposed to be edgy comedy, and to me, that is bullshit.
What, like that Strike Witches thing?
Yeah.
Jeez, old Pete.
There's sort of like, oh man, they're right on the cutting edge of humor. And it's like, no, this is...
Oh, they're on the edge of something there, that's right.
They're on, yeah.
Well, you know, there's... In my opinion, they pushed the fan service envelope as far as they could possibly push it over a decade ago when they made Aika.
Oh, yeah.
And that show was outright hilarious because of to what extent they went to show nothing but panty shots. Like, I don't think more than a 3-second span of screen time goes to something besides panty shots in that show. And that's funny for about 30 seconds and fast forward as you go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, and then it gets boring.
You know, the other show that does that goes so over the top to the point where it's actually revolting and nauseating is Aiken.
Oh, God.
That's just disgusting. Like, that show makes me sick.
Well, that's because they're like melting beanbags on their chest rather than actual, you know, boobs. It's like they're sagging and they're like the porn stars that get the giant implants about 10 years afterwards.
Well, yeah, and that's based on it's like a 2-episode OVA or something like that, 3 episodes, and there's literally 10 volumes of that manga, like. Someone bought 10 volumes of that shit. Like, I cannot believe that.
Oh, when Frank was still doing manga at Media Blazers, he would like, I would get the sigh, more Aiken comments from him on quite a regular basis. And he's like, I'm like, more Aiken, huh? He's like, it sells that in the yaoi.
Well, so here's a question I would ask. Is the fan service stuff the equivalent of the Hollywood typical, like, okay, so like the fan service anime is obviously paying for the other productions, right? That's obviously
like
what's
Megan
happening.
Fox trying to swim with
Well, no, I mean, I was going to make a different comparison. Junky, like, children's and family films like Marmaduke and Yogi Bear. Like, those movies pay for other films to get made. You know, they sort of keep the industry afloat.
Japan has its own set of children's...
Well, I'm just trying to draw a financial comparison. And
Profitable shovelware that subsidizes the rest of the stuff. I think that used to be true. I don't think it's true these days. I think a lot of what we're seeing is a little bit of desperation. Mm. You know, last couple seasons, actually last couple years, there have been some giant bomb shows that one would think, given how pandering they were, would be big hits. But no, they fell on their face. So I think it's just... when these projects are being reviewed and a few each season are being greenlit, I think it's a matter of the people in charge going, well, this seems less risky.
Yeah, right. If we load it up with ass shots, the fans will turn out for the fans. There's a higher percentage that the fans will turn out for it.
Or at least we know this small contingency will buy it.
Yeah, these thousand guys will buy it. Yeah.
You wonder how many fans they've burned off coming back, though, with all that stuff. Like the actual prudes.
I think
the actual prudes have left this business like a decade ago.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, if you are a true prude and you even think about getting into anime, it's going to take you about an hour before you decide it's not for you. I mean, even like Naruto has plenty of fan service in it, you know. Hell, One Piece has plenty of fan service now.
Naruto, the fan service has gone both, you know, male and female. I mean, hell, they redesigned the Sasuke character to never wear a shirt.
So I gotta ask, so you're down on the fan service stuff, but what have you seen lately that you liked?
What have I seen lately that I've liked? House of Five Leaves. Oh my god, I love that.
That was good. I didn't see that.
It seemed like Japan went to France and was like, help us. Help us make a story move.
Actually, that was Besquash. It didn't do very well.
Right.
It was directly Besquash, actually. I liked House of Five Leaves. I mean, I think like the fan service stuff, I just ignore it. Like it doesn't bother me because I know it's going to be there and it's not really for me and I just kind of ignore it. So like last season we had House of Five Leaves, Tatami Galaxy. This season we have Occult Academy, which I'm still enjoying, and there's fan service in that show, but it doesn't bother me because it doesn't get in the way of the story.
Yeah, that's the thing. Fan service, unless it's really, really distracting, it's just there.
Yeah.
I'm used to the girls having boobs and probably back problems later in life.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Sure. You know, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for calling in and chatting with us today.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Okay, and finally, for our last little segment here, I wanted to have on relatively freshly minted ANN critic and well-known anime critic around the internet, Hope Chapman. Hey, Hope.
Hi there.
How's it going?
Going pretty good.
I'm really happy you were able to come on. We've been trying to get you on the podcast for a couple of times now, and you're just so busy. you never have time for us.
I'm sorry. I do keep awfully busy. I think part of it is actually problem of getting on Twitter, which I didn't like. I used to despise Twitter with a passion. Everybody said, oh, you got to get on Twitter. Like, okay. The moment I get on, everybody's asking me for, like, you know, cameos and favors and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is why. This is ulterior motives, folks. That's not nice. But
hey, it's called networking. Like
yes, I understand that part too. But
so, yeah. I mean, I'm sort of familiar with your sort of history as a reviewer of anime, at least. Run down, like, how'd you get started into it? What sparked your interest in doing it, and where'd you really start?
Well, it's kind of, I don't know, I guess I would call it, like, garage band reviewing, because there's I was actually kind of encouraged to do it by a member of our forums, Daxumni, who wanted to do an online reviewing. And I said, oh, well, I was planning on doing that. He says, well, why haven't you? And I was like, oh, good question. So I got some decent video editing software and decided I wanted to do video reviews because there were sites like Screw Attack and The Escapist that had made, you know, a huge foray into internet game reviewing. And I was like, well, there's not much for anime yet. There's a lot for movies and games. But So I decided to just kind of take my own ghetto approach to doing it. And because I wasn't very funny, I wasn't like, you know, the angry video game nerd kind of thing where you just kind of go off this sensational, cussy, you know, funny stuff. I was like, well, I'm kind of serious. So I'll start out with about a 5 to 10 second clip of me doing something a little ludicrous. Like, I don't know, I've put ketchup in my nose for Corinne, and I laughed maniacally in a field in the middle of nowhere for Higurashi. Just something that make people go, what is this? And stop for about 10 seconds and then watch the video, which is mostly me being serious and very, you know, critically breaking something down. So I was like, well, let me see if I can get anybody to watch this. And thanks to ANN, I actually kind of promoted the show on the forums, which you're not supposed to do. I don't recommend people do that.
We didn't notice for like a year.
I got away. I don't know how that happened. It was against the rules. And Zach eventually messaged me and said, hey, you know, you're not supposed to be doing this, but since people have gone on for 20 pages about it, I guess it's okay. And I was like, well, okay, I'll stop. So I stopped at that point. But by that time, I'd gotten enough of a following on YouTube. I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to do this regularly. So I did it for about once a week. And then eventually I started getting offers to go on other sites and do it. And I ended up on thatguywiththeglasses.com, which is kind of a multimedia. They cover all sorts of different media reviews. So now I just do, I mean, it's anywhere from 10 to 20 minute reviews of series, just kind of in video form. I don't know. For some reason, people enjoy watching them, so I keep making them.
Well, so here's a question. Specifically, the quote-unquote angry video game nerd, James Rolfe, he's very obviously wants to be a filmmaker, and that's where that's coming from. Like, he makes those videos because he wants to be a filmmaker, not necessarily. Yeah. I mean, all right, so he's into video games, but these are clearly short films. Is that coming from a similar place? Are you coming from a place where you want to be a critic or you want to be a filmmaker?
They're actually kind of split because I am studying film in school. I used to be a broadcasting student, and our school recently adopted a film major because I think most of the students were slanted that way. Like, everyone in TV production really wanted to study film rather than TV news. So I switched over the major as well. But I don't really mix them much because I've gotten into, like, my video reviews aren't filmic. They aren't cinematic in any way, shape, or form. I mean, maybe I try to get some interesting angles. Like, for the Air review, I tried to, because Air TV has this thing where they like to layer over, I don't know if it's a mat or whatever it is, but they have the character outlines and it's like black, or it's like a picture of the sky where the character would be, but the character's still doing things. So I tried to stage it so that you could see the sky and you could see me, but I was just a big black shadow. So I just, you know, blew the backlight out. Yeah, exactly. So, but other than that, no, they're not really cinematic. It's just, you know, footage and me talking over it. Now I try to make the footage, you know, relate to what I'm talking about. But no, there's nothing film student-y like it about it. I couldn't put it in a portfolio or anything like that. So as far as student films and the reviews, they're two very different things. I would say the reviews are more critique-like, but I don't know. Right. You definitely could not take my reviews and put them out as any kind of professional anything. But people enjoy them, so...
Right.
That's so strange that, you know, my gut reaction would be that a gimmick like that wouldn't really do much to bolster respectability, but it seems like it has.
Well, that's because, like I said, I try to put all the humor and the, oh, this girl's doofy, in the first 10 seconds where you have an introduction. And I've gotten complaints. I mean, I have a lot of fans, which, again, shocks me, but I've gotten a lot of complaints that I'm boring because people are used to, when they see video reviews, they're used to the Looney Tunes, spastic, funny, or, you know, like, there's anybody with a British accent that does video reviews gets a major following like that. You know, doesn't matter if they're good or bad, which I know some very good ones, but because it's the accent, people are attracted to that. So I don't really have a gimmick like that. I just kind of play it straight, and I'm very critical and very, but at the same time, it works. Like, my most famous review, I guess, is the Evangelion one, because I did it on a whim, and it got splattered all over the internet because it's like a half hour long and it's this really involved look at the show, because I don't like it. So usually if somebody doesn't like Evangelion, you know, it's woe to them. They're going to get attacked, you know, for their opinion. But I tried to be as I don't know, in depth as I could about why I didn't like it, and that I didn't like it, but it was still very good, which is a hard thing to explain and, you know, not sound very, you know, biased. But I guess I did a good job because people really, really seemed to like it. And I got told by, it got splattered onto Ava Geeks, which is a forum that I think is the big hub for the most fanatical Evangelion. Like, they have like an encyclopedia there and stuff like that. And people took to it well. They said, oh, this is the best negative review I've ever heard of Ava. So I was happy with it, I guess. So I guess it just kind of, I'm just very, very different from the people that do it solely as an entertainment thing. And I try to be serious. It's just in video form, which is different. I don't know if that made any sense at all.
No, it makes sense. Although I wanted to mention the Ava Geeks are the people who routinely get into hilarious internet slap fights with that V for Vendetta guy.
Oh, no. front row seats.
Going back to what you were saying earlier, that strikes me as funny that it's sort of acts like a Trojan horse, because you open the video with a, hey, I'm going to do a wacky review, and then it's just a very well-reasoned, well-thought-out, serious review. You know, and there's a lot of that happening right now. You know, Angry Video Game Nerd, the Nostalgia Critic, which is on that guy with the glasses, and you know the best of them, like I think you can't really argue the best one is the Red Letter Media guy who does the Star Wars movie reviews. And it's,
oh yeah, that's great.
It's its own beast. It's its own animal. I think it's a new form of it's a new way to do movie reviews. But that's not quite what you're doing. What you're doing is more traditional review that just happens to be spoken with footage. Like, it's a visual, it has a visual component to it. But that's one of the reasons I hired you as a critic, was because you had these very sophisticated opinions about how to review something. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. What is your personal philosophy when it comes to a review? How are you, like, what's your take on it?
Well, the number one thing, because people ask me that sometimes, because they pick on me for not pick on me, but praise me for having reviews that are hard to disagree with. They're like, you know, even when you say you hate something and I love it, I can't disagree with you, and it pisses me off. And I'm like, well, that's because when I make a review, I try to not just say whether I like or hate something, but say what about it, like, would attract a certain kind of person. Like, my least favorite anime of all time is Elfen Lied. I mean, I despise Elfen Lied. So when I saw it and I decided to review it, I ended up giving it a decent score and basically said, you know, this is sensationalist entertainment. It's a soap opera that kind of pretends to have some deeper context to it, but it's there to grab you and shake you and say, now, doesn't this one make you want to cry, or doesn't this scare you? And I said, now, if you like that, I mean, there's merit to that, but I can't honestly say it's very good. And so the people that loved Elfen Lied were like, yeah, I go to it to get that emotional, you know, jerk from it, and that's what the appeal is. So I can't really disagree with that. So I guess when I review something, I want to bring across whether you're going to like it or hate it, rather than whether I like it or hate it. So
that even-handedness is really kind of rarer on the internet. It's always either worst show ever or best show ever, and there's like very little room for nuance in most opinions.
I don't know where that comes from as far as me. But when you say worst show ever or best show ever, maybe it's because I've seen so much stuff. I don't ever see worst show ever or best show ever anymore. You know, my personal favorite show is Full Metal Alchemist, but over time, you know, I've seen some things that are probably better than Full Metal Alchemist, or I hate Elfen Lied, but there's many things that are worse out there, and I don't know. I don't want to jump to extremes. There's usually some merit to be found in just about everything. It just kind of depends on what the viewer is looking for, you know.
It's a real tightrope to walk, because
and then you're never going to please everybody ever. Well, but you just want to be informative. Like, I just kind of want to tell people what to look for in a certain thing, or whether they're going to like it or hate it.
Well, it's the pitfall there, and something that I don't think you run into, but I've seen it before, people who say, like, well, there's merit in everything. Well, okay, it's very easy to adopt that approach and then come across as being apologist or just not really having standards. All you're looking for is the good, and saying or the worst, which is, if you like shows about magical ninjas piloting robots, you'll love this one. And it's like, okay, well, there's no value in that kind of review. That's marketing. That's not reviewing anything.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me kind of Richard Roper, actually. Maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, but he does that a lot, I think, where he's like, well, you know what? This wasn't any good, but if you like this kind of thing, and I'm like, you just said it wasn't any good, man. You know, be honest.
Yeah, well, Roper's not as bad as let's say, who's the Rolling Stone guy? Why can't I remember his name? Anyway, the Rolling Stone guy is the sort of, like, epic, like, quote whore, I believe is what they call him. Peter Travers, that's right. Peter Travers, where he just gives a good review to everything just so we can get his quote poll quote on the poster. You know, but yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've let reviewers go because it turned out that they were adopting that approach. You know, they literally had one guy say, I will never write a negative review of anything. And I'm like, well, then you're not hireable.
Aw. Yeah, that's, yeah. And there is a difference also because between, as I mentioned, your personal opinion and what you think something's merit is. Like, when I give something ratings, people disagree with the ratings. I'm like, well, I spent 2 seconds giving that rating, and I spent 9 minutes talking about the series itself. Why not take the 9 minutes into consideration? Don't think about the 2 seconds at the end. Because I hate having to do, like, the concrete ratings, but that's what a lot of people want. So I kind of succumb to that. So when I give a rating, it's based on how meretricious something is, how you know, much worth there is to it, you know, how artsy it is or how well thought out, how well produced it was. But that doesn't mean I'll like it. Like Evangelion, you know, I gave a 3 out of 4 because it was, I mean, it's a brilliant work. There's a lot of things that are revolutionary about it. I think it's gorgeous in some aspects, but you know, other things about it just drive me crazy. So I was like, it's a 3 out of 4, but I absolutely hate this show. Wow. So I had to end up saying that.
See, I don't know that I could. I don't know that I could. I guess you're sort of judging it based on, look, I understand technically this is really well made. It's really well put together. So you're sort of drawing a dividing line between what you personally find enjoyable and what you know will be enjoyable to others.
Yes, definitely. Just I kind of try to think in the vein of, well, you know, what do people watch anime for? What are they looking for, etc. Like Samurai Champloo is another big one where I said, well, you know, I've seen deeper and more well written on paper anyway stories on like Disney Channel original movies than I have Samurai Champloo. But on a directorial level, you know, on visual and how entertaining it is, oh yeah, I can watch it, you know, any day of the week. It's so much fun to watch, and there's a lot of brilliant things about the, you know, the cinematography and the art. But on paper, no, it's, oh God, it's just really, really banal.
Stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid. But who cares? You know, would I recommend Samurai Champloo to people? Yes. Is it terribly smart show? No, it's really, really cliche. Who cares? It's entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had to do that with the Speed Racer movie, because while I found it, while at the time, I've since come around, my opinion of that film changed. But at the time, I was like, wow, I cannot wait to get the fuck out of this theater. But this is kind of genius. Like, this is they really succeeded at what they were trying to do. I just can't tolerate even a frame of this shit. So, you know, I gave it, and ultimately I gave it like a B+ and said, wow, what a success. Ugh, you know.
Is my popcorn bucket empty? Can I vomit in it now?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ugh, man.
God, stuff like that just makes me want to pour gasoline on myself.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a tough line to walk. Going back to what we were talking about a little bit ago, you know, worst, best show ever. I think that with any critic, that's a really rare reaction, but it does happen. Like twice in the last 10 years, I've seen a movie and said, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. And it happened one was in like 2001, and the next one was 2007, I think. And the 2007 is still the worst movie I've ever seen. But has that happened to you at all? Like, you, even a show or any movie where you're just like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen?
Well, Zach, you can't just leave it at that. You have to say what they were.
Oh, yes,
well,
the first you do.
Sorry, 2001, worst movie, Master Disguise. And then 2000.
Who's going to argue that?
2007, and this is terrible because I love the Wayne's World movies. 2007 was The Love Guru, which to this day is the worst movie I've ever seen. Absolutely.
my question, no, I'm not astonished that you thought it was bad. Why did you go see it?
Oh, I was just, did you see the previews? I'm one of these people that has an absolutely insatiable curiosity to see pretty much everything. and it was a boring day, and it was Get Smart was out on the same weekend, so I'm like, you know, I'll just go see one and then the other, and walked out of the Love Guru wanting combination murder suicide the minute
that was a 50-50 and you chose the tail end, I think.
But that's a rare reaction. I haven't had that reaction to any film I've seen since then. But it does happen, so I'm wondering, has that happened for you at all in the last, you know, 10 years or so?
I must be a positive-ish person, because with anime, now with movies, yeah, a lot of worst, best. It's hard for me to, movies that have such a broader scale, it's hard for me to narrow down like my favorites or anything. Anime is narrower to me, so worst? Not really. If I see something terrible, it's usually, I knew it was going to be terrible. Like Girls Bravo, Akitosan, I knew they're going to be awful, I don't care. Well, with Girls Bravo still had a couple laughs to it, like 2 out of 2,000. Worst happens very rarely. Best happens more frequently. When I saw Razafon, I was like, well, that's the best thing I've ever seen in a long time. And I saw Wolf's Rain, and that's the best thing I've ever seen in a long time.
I don't think anyone's ever said that before.
Hey, Wolf's Rain was my favorite show of the year when it came out. I loved that show.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why have I heard so much bad about it?
Because people are stupid.
No, it's because it's very hard to understand.
It's a weird fantasy that is doing weird things with its characters pretty much the entire time. And the ending, which I think is genius. The ending proves that it basically hits the reset button and tells you that this whole thing is cyclical. It's a very interesting piece of science fiction and fantasy. I really loved it.
It's brilliant, but it's devastating. And yeah, it's Keiko Nobumoto, who I greatly respect as a writer, but she's cryptic. Everything she's written, the parts of Cowboy Bebop that she wrote are cryptic, so it's like, oh.
Yeah.
I think people were also expecting hot guys that are also wolves that get into wacky action adventures, and I think people were expecting something that it wasn't.
Well, now they have Latter-day Twilight.
Yeah.
I just poured gasoline on the film student.
Let me burn. I think I rent my clothes and weeped in anguish when I saw the New Moon thing having surpassed, you know, the greatest opening weekend or whatever. Gross. That was terrible. That was a sad day.
Well, you know, quality doesn't really pay in Japan either. I mean,
I'm not a Japanophile. I'm not one of those people that says anime is much better than, you know, Western entertainment. Oh, heck no.
He was saying that the quality doesn't, like, the best movies that are playing right now are not in wide release. You know what that's what he's saying. And that the same
quality
thing
is never popular, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you mentioned something like the there's this movie, The Kids Are All Right, that I looked to see if it was playing around and I was like, oh no, it's a Sundance film. I guess it's not. But,
well, you live in Manhattan.
No, that's the person we were just talking to.
I'm sorry. I'm brain fart.
I live in Kentucky, so no.
I'm sorry. Well, it's also about gay people, so you're probably never going to get it there.
Oh, yeah, there's that. I'll have to Netflix it later. But yeah, but for best, when going back to the thing about best ever, I have that reaction, and then I calm down and say, well, since there's no such thing as a perfect work, the closest I've ever seen might be the original Full Metal Alchemist, Screw Brotherhood, but there's no such thing as a perfect work. So it's, when you say best ever, it's probably just something that hits you in a place where you'd never been whacked quite before, or you know, just I think even Death Note, which I don't think is all that great, had that impact because it was something that I hadn't seen before. It was a shonen, it's a shonen fighty kind of show. There's not a whole lot under the surface that's different from the others, but on the surface, you know, you have a villain protagonist and you have all these sensational elements, and it's much more cinematically creative, the anime version, than any shonen at the time. So yeah, I mean, even Death Note had that effect. So it's usually just kind of whatever slaps you at the moment. Which might explain Evangelion's popularity too, because I mean, it's unlike anything that came out at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned there's no such thing as a perfect work. I've seen movies that I think are perfect that I know objectively are not. But I, you know, I've seen movies where I'm like, well, that was that usually is followed. That's usually the thought following. That's the best movie I've ever seen. You know, that sort of thing. But I think there are moments of perfection in these series. That's, you get enough of those moments of perfection in something like Full Metal Alchemist, and yeah, it becomes this masterpiece that you sort of hold on to dear. So you're not into it. You can't do the Brotherhood.
I can once it gets, well, it just seems redundant to me. I can once it gets past the horrible first couple episodes where they're like, well, let's catch up to where the manga is and throw this together. And it's like, oh, this is terrible. But once it gets into the manga based stuff, I can watch it. But I've read the manga and I know that this is a carbon copy of what, I mean, panel for panel, line for line, shot for shot, what in the manga. So I'm like, this is a redundant series. I still kind of enjoy it, but it's really, it doesn't need to exist. So I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. So what are you watching lately? What have you seen lately that's tickled your fancy, so to speak?
In terms of anime, I don't think I've seen much new, because I saw the first couple episodes of a lot of the stuff that come out for summer, and that was about it. In the past week, I don't know. I don't think I've seen a whole lot new. When I think new, I actually think of when I used to be watching what came out in the spring, which was, of the stuff I kept following, I kept watching Hero Man and Kaicho wa Maid Sama, and they both kind of turned out to be just fun things to watch. It wasn't like it was a great thing. In fact, Hero Man is quite predictable, but it's just, I'm watching a lot of Digimon because I'm doing a Digimon celebration month for That Guy with Glasses. And so it's kind of that same appeal where it's like, this is kids entertainment done right. I don't feel stupid when I'm watching this. So I liked Hero Man because it's like, this is for little kids, but it's not dumb. It's very enjoyable. It's simple, and it, you know, kind of can be enjoyed by people that aren't little bitty too. So, and then Kaicho wa Maid Sama was just man service. That was the reason I was watching that one. So
You participate in our preview guides, and I would imagine that's a sort of a unique experience. I don't know if you've done that before. You have to watch everything.
It's embarrassing, some of the stuff that's I didn't watch much fan subs before I started doing the preview guides, like, ever. I wouldn't hear about stuff till it came out, you know, stateside. So watching everything that comes out, whether it's going to be licensed or not, I'm going, oh, there's a lot of garbage out there, isn't there?
It wakes you up.
It's amazing how much of a gatekeeper that licensing plays, isn't it?
Isn't it? Oh, mercy. Like, well, I don't know about that. Funimation, they haven't licensed it, but they're streaming the Shukufuku no Campanella series. And I was like, that banal, terrible. Oh, man, I wanted to slip my wrist every minute I watched that thing. That's awful.
That's one of those with the preview guides. I kind of let you guys sort of deal with that sort of thing. Like, the minute I saw, like, the picture on the little chart that shows you what's coming out this season, I'm like, well, I'll leave that one to everyone else. And then
I knew it was based on a game, which means it could be terrible, but I didn't expect it to be boring. Something could be terrible and still be entertaining, you know.
Boring's the worst. That's just the worst. Especially this trend lately where the first episode is really, really ponderous and doesn't explain anything and just, like, throws all these characters at you and assumes you already know what's going on.
You know, Campanella didn't have that problem. It threw all these characters at you, but it explained everything in the most unnatural, annoying, boring way. Like, they literally, like, they're, you know, the cliche about let's sit down and have tea and discuss the plot. They actually sat down and had tea on a balcony and discussed the plot. I was like, how long is 8 minutes? Get off your asses and go do something. There's a festival in town. You've been talking about it for 5 minutes. Go. So,
Did you continue watching anything from the summer?
From summer? I have to catch up on Black Butler 2 because I watched all of Black Butler 1, and therefore I want to see what they're doing with it. And that's another one where it's, I will openly admit, the only reason I'm watching it is for a guilty pleasure kind of thing. But also, my roommate adores Black Butler, and so she's been watching it, and she's like, have you seen it yet? Have you seen what they're doing? And I'm like, no, okay, I haven't. I'm behind, okay? Just leave me alone. I'll catch up later. So there's that one, and then, I don't know, there's probably some other summer shows, but I haven't caught up yet. So Occult Academy is another one of those that's like, it's good, but it really wasn't my thing, I guess. So yeah. I don't think I'll be watching any more of that one, but I don't know. There's a couple others, maybe. Shiki had wolves in it, so that might be interesting.
Did you ever continue on with High School of the Dead?
High School of the Dead, yeah, I did a little bit more, and it's entertaining, but it's, yeah, it's very entertaining, and it's definitely something I would sit down and watch with friends, but, it, you know, of course there's nothing more to it, but I don't think there was anything that was real complex or gripping in this season in general. I don't, so that might be why I haven't followed anything, honestly.
Well, that's the summer for you.
Yeah, it's the summer. It's fine. I've seen a lot. Actually, that's why I haven't seen much anime. I've seen more movies this summer than I have the past like 5 years because I have a friend that works at the theater and she's been getting us all into the movies for free. So I've seen pretty much everything that's come out this year.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Marmaduke?
No, I didn't see that one. No, there was a couple I passed on. I didn't see Last Airbender either because they were all going and I could get in for free and I said, I'm not doing it.
Not even worth the price.
No, not even worth the free admission, guys. I don't want to see that butchered that badly.
So we'll wrap up then, I guess, with what's the best and worst you've seen this summer?
Well, that's cheating because it's Inception so far because that's one of the better movies I've seen in the past two years or so.
I thought you said you were kind of meh on Inception.
Maybe compared to other Nolan's other movies. I loved Inception. I was comparing it to his other stuff, which is, you know, it's not Memento. It's not The Dark Knight. But it was, you know, it was cool. I guess I'm one of those philosophical people, so I like movies that have a deep subtext. And Inception compared to Memento or whatever wasn't all that deep, but it was intellectual. It was fascinating, so...
I didn't think Dark Knight was deep and philosophical.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you're right. I'm remembering the action and how much Harvey Dent's face bothered me more than I remember the deeper subtexts.
Yeah, it's like, how did that just happen by accident, Mr. Dent?
And why are you talking like this?
Because it wouldn't be scary. Can you imagine him threatening to go in the limo? sound like Rocky on speed or something. I don't know. Yeah, the worst. I don't know. I guess the worst one that I sat through was Dinner for Schmucks, but it wasn't terrible. I walked into it knowing I wasn't going to like it, so. I actually came out and I didn't like it.
I walked into that one thinking, well, maybe, and because I like Jemaine Clement and I like Steve Carell and Paul Rudd, but I don't trust I don't trust Jay Roach as far as I can throw him. So I figured it would be pretty hit and miss. And hey, it was like an hour too long.
Yeah, it was. Well, the gags were like, there's a certain point where a gag gets to. A degree where you feel like they're trying to make you laugh. They're like, please laugh at it. Like, what's that one that came out, the anime? Mitsuo Domoe, about the little kindergartners. It wasn't that offensive, but I felt like they were trying to make me laugh the entire time. And it's like, I'm not in middle school. You can't make me laugh with this silly stuff.
That's the Hitalia dub.
The Hitalia dub is, that's a guilty pleasure too. I know Hitalia isn't very good. Like,
Thank you. It's not just me. I've gotten so much shit for my hate on Hitalia.
It's not very good, but it's not... I've never seen the Japanese take every country in the world and basically tell us what they thought of it in no uncertain, censored terms at all. And no, even if it's not very accurate, or some of it's not very accurate, but there's little nuggets of truth to it, and it is funny, and there's a lot of, you know... Shonen Ai kind of man service to it, which is fun to watch with other girlfriends. So I enjoy it. I don't think it's good, but it's definitely fun to sit down and just, you know, let wash over you for a bit.
Okay. So awesome. All right. Well, dude, thanks for coming on and talking with us. I really appreciate it. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Oh yeah, well, absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
All right, that's our show. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Apologies to those of you that called in for the call out, and we wound up not having quite enough time for all of you, but we'll get you on some point in the future. So thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you all next week.